Hello, you are listening to the Charles Bonnet Syndrome Podcast. My name is Shimon Foy, and today's special guest is Megan Chapman. Megan Chapman is an occupational therapist that specializes in assisting people with low vision. So, Megan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
Oh, that's great. I'm doing pretty good. Thanks for asking. So, can you tell me a little bit about what you do and how you help patients?
Yeah, of course. So I am an occupational therapist, and I'll give a little brief background on occupational therapy. It's not as well known. Everyone hears the word occupational and they immediately think jobs. We don't help you just getting a job. Occupations are all the different things you do during the day. So eating, sleeping, getting dressed, driving a car, making dinner, all those little activities that you do are your different occupations. So as an occupational therapist, we look at all those different things, see what may be hindered or affected, and figure out how to help you get back to doing those again. With low vision specifically, we look at how low vision kind of affects all those different things. So does your low vision affect the way that you get dressed in the morning? Does your low vision affect the way you pick out your clothes? Does it affect the way that you make your dinner or read the labels on your cans, things like that? And so we will figure out how to adapt and use some of your residual vision if we need to. We'll figure out how to add different aids and things to make it a little bit easier for you, lots of different assistive technologies, things like that. So we have a very wide scope of different things that we can work on, but as a whole, we can look at a bunch of different things with low vision and see all the things that's affected by it and show you how to get around your life a little bit better.
Can you mention the name of the low vision company that you work for?
Yeah, of course. I am with Low Vision Works. We're based out of Sarasota, Florida, but we treat patients all kind of down the coast of Florida in this area. We also do telehealth and things like that so that we can help out wherever we need to. The president of the company, Michelle, she has been leading kind of occupational therapy in the low vision world for the past 20 years. She's phenomenal and has really had a pretty big impact on the low vision community and pushing occupational therapy. So we've got an awesome team of therapists that treat different patients with low vision all in this area. So glaucoma, macular degeneration, TBI, visual injuries, things like that.
So what made you actually choose to focus on patients that have low vision? Can you speak a little bit about that?
Yeah, so with occupational therapy, if you do know what occupational therapy is, you typically think of either like a school system, your child maybe getting help with handwriting or behavioral things, maybe like autism-based or cerebral palsy-based, things like that. You also may think of if you've ever been in the hospital and you needed like an acute care occupational therapist or inpatient rehab occupational therapist, things like that. Those are all just kind of the general things that OT can do. You can also do hand therapy and all different things. Low vision specifically is kind of a little hidden pocket of things that occupational therapists can do. So with me specifically, if you would have asked me 5 years ago, are you going to do low vision? I would have never even thought about it just because it is such a little small pocket of occupational therapy. But whenever I started really looking into it and talking with some of the other therapists that do low vision and learning more about it, I was like, this is phenomenal. There is so much good that you can do stepping into the low vision world of occupational therapy that I just did not even know was out there. So after I got my license and OT and everything, and I was looking around for different things that I thought might be what I was interested in, low vision kind of appeared out of nowhere, and I've stuck with it ever since, and I absolutely love it.
Thank you for what you do, and thanks for explaining that. So I understand that you deal with all sorts of patients that have low vision, and as we know, people that have visual impairments, sometimes maybe 30 to 40% of them can develop a condition called Charles Bonnet syndrome. Can you tell me, when did you first find out about Charles Bonnet syndrome?
So I first found out about Charles-Bonnet syndrome actually whenever I began with my current company. It was not something that I actually learned in school or anything like that, but I learned about it whenever I was going through all of the training and everything to specialize in low vision. And as I was doing that, I got a good idea of what Charles-Bonnet was, what to look for with my patients that may have it, and things that we could do to treat it. And then once I actually got out into the world of low vision and treating different patients, I very quickly actually saw Charles-Bonnet in its true form with different patients and things. So very, very early on in my career, I started learning about all the different things that Charles-Bonnet looks like, how different it is for all of my different patients, because it is not the same for any of them by any means. It's very wide variety of different things that may happen. And then some of the different things that work best with them, things that don't work best with them, and just kind of the differences in between all of my patients with that.
So how are you assisting your patients in general? Can you talk a little bit about some things that OTs do? Because some people may not be familiar with what an OT does and how they can assist someone with low vision.
Absolutely. I'll do a deep dive kind of into this. So one of the biggest things that occupational therapists do for our patients with Charles-Bonnet syndrome is, one, just education. Education and advocacy. Those are two of the like biggest things that I try to look for. So what I mean by that is, one, try to let you know all the different resources that are out there. So I will look at different support groups. I will look at different educational pieces, pamphlets, things like that. I actually found your podcast and share that with my patients as a way to kind of connect with some different people who have Charles-Bonnet syndrome and feel like you're not so alone. I will look at different things that I may be able to refer you to. So, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy is one thing that's been kind of mentioned as something that might be beneficial to Charles-Bonnet syndrome patients. So we'll look at that. I can refer out to different resources for the blind that may help benefit that, such as the Lighthouse for the Blind down here in Florida or the Division of Blind Services, things like that. So that's kind of the referral and like advocacy piece. Also, just letting you know what Charles-Bonnet syndrome is, because just because someone has low vision doesn't mean that they've heard that word before. I think we've seen that kind of play out pretty frequently, but I try to start every single evaluation. At some point, I will slide it in there, if not the first session, then the second one, and just be like, hey, just going to let you know, this is a thing that can happen, you know, not to scare you if it's not happening right now, but I do want you to be aware of it just in case anything were to ever come up in the future, just because it is so kind of, it's very hidden in the medical world. It's not as common as what we would like it to be. Whereas if you go to any medical provider, they're going to say, oh yeah, that's Charles-Bonnet syndrome. It's just not as known. So I try to, with all of my patients, give them some type of overview of it. And just from doing that in itself and just saying, hey, this is a possibility for you, I have found multiple patients that just sigh, just relief. And they're like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad you told me that. I thought there were ghosts in my house. I thought I was going crazy. I have not told anybody about this because I didn't know what was happening. So I am so glad that you told me that. I'd be like, ah, okay. So this is why I tell everyone, so that those people that are experiencing this and haven't spoke out to anyone or reached out to any family members or medical providers or things like that because they're scared, that's an opportunity to reach those patients, because 100% of my patients are low vision. So I come across a great deal of Charles-Bonnet syndrome. So that's one really big piece, is just kind of giving them the relief of knowing that someone knows what's going on. Now they know what's going on and they're not crazy. Now I do get some patients as well that already know what's going on, and they'll say, oh yeah, I've had that for a year now. Got it. All good to go. I'm like, perfect. So we can look at different things at that point, such as like different behavioral techniques to kind of offset the hallucinations or try to manage them more effectively, I guess. Some of those different things may be repeated blinking. It may be intermittent eye closure. It may be staring intently at your hallucinations, maybe changing the lighting, maybe reaching out and touching the hallucinations. Lots of different things, and nothing is a one-size-fits-all. Some of those work, or some, maybe all of those work for my patients. Maybe none of them work for one of my patients. It's kind of a guessing game at times to where we are trying some different ones, seeing what works, giving feedback on it, moving to the next one, and kind of checking them off the list to see what's working best for that patient. So that's another big one that we do with our Charles-Bonnet syndrome patients. As far as the psychological impact, there's a big one with that, as we've seen. You know, some people with Charles-Bonnet syndrome, they will say, everything's good and dandy. I actually enjoy what I'm seeing. I'm not seeing much of anything else. So if it's full of flowers and rainbows and butterflies, I will gladly see that. And that's awesome. If you have some of those patients that are on the other end of that, that are getting some of the more frightening or unnerving hallucinations, then there's probably going to be a pretty big psychological impact there. So trying to look at all the different emotional responses that patients will have to hallucinations. Occupational therapy does use cognitive behavioral therapy as kind of a theory, just one of the theories that we can use to guide our interventions. And so I'll kind of hone that in a little bit, still always refer out to, you know, the more talk-based therapy people that can help out with that as well. But we can look at all the different like social relationships that may be impacted from the psychological pieces of Charles-Bonnet syndrome, because it's very biological in its sense of like how it presents, but it also is very psychological in the effects that it has on the patient. So they may have more trouble going out in public because they know that when they get in a car, it's going to look like their car is driving through a cornfield or something like that. They may be scared to walk around a store because they know that there's going to be little things in their path as they're trying to walk around. So look at all the different ways about that with just it impacting their occupational performance. So their occupational performance is all those things that they're doing during the day, looking at how that's affected by Charles-Bonnet and seeing how we can kind of overcome some of those. And then I would say the last big one that I do for my patients is increase awareness among different healthcare professionals and patients. I'm doing the patients piece by, you know, telling more and more patients about Charles-Bonnet. But with the healthcare professionals piece, I try to increase that awareness as much as I can. It's very, if you mention that to anybody at Low Vision Works, they're going to know what you're talking about. They're going to know how to treat it. If you mention it to most optometrists and ophthalmologists, they'll probably know what you're talking about. If you reach out past that, it's getting questionable. And even with optometrists and ophthalmologists, as we've seen, sometimes that's questionable. But you will see that like a lot of your general practitioners don't know what's going on. You will see that different mental health advocates and things like that may not know what's happening, especially for patients if they're going to the ER or something like that. Like they've had a fall and they say the word hallucinations to their ER doctor, that's a red flag going up right there in the ER doctor's mind. And if they're not educated on Charles-Bonnet syndrome with low vision patients specifically, then that's a big deal right there. So I've had conversations with different healthcare professionals that I am aware of, talked to some different therapists and counselors and nurses and things like that, just to take a little group poll among my circle of people. And, you know, have you ever heard of Charles-Bonnet syndrome? Does that phrase mean anything to you? And the overwhelming response has been no. So I have been trying to work on a few different advocacy pieces to help kind of boost the awareness of Charles-Bonnet syndrome among the healthcare world. So that's kind of that was a deep dive, but that's a big, we do a lot with Charles-Bonnet syndrome patients, especially those who are having a lot of occupational performance deficits and the things that they're doing throughout the day are really being affected.
That sounds great. one thing that sticks out to me is the fact that you tell your patients about Charles-Bonnet syndrome and you let them know that this is a possibility. And I think that would be huge if more medical professionals could do that. And that's not easy. And the first thing that came to my mind is there is probably a certain percentage of the population, if they hear something, it could manifest either because their mind is overactive or they're imaginative or they're fearful or can maybe be a hypochondriac for lack of better words. But let's just say that's 10 to 15% of the population. But the other 85 to 90% of the population, it could give them relief. And just because you talk about something doesn't mean it's going to happen. Just like somebody may talk about cancer doesn't mean somebody's going to get cancer. So if just the fact of saying that, hey, this is something that happens to some people that are blind or visually impaired, this is what it is. If it does happen, don't be alarmed. It won't hurt you. It can be quite annoying, and it can be some people experience it differently. I don't know how you say that. I'm curious if you would share some tips or something in case there's an occupational therapist or maybe an ophthalmologist or someone that would like to do that, but they don't necessarily know how. And it could be different for each patient because you got to really realize how that person is and what's the best way to approach that conversation. But I think that's so important, and that would help with Charles-Bonnet syndrome so much. Just if somebody will let you know, hey, this is something that's possible, because there's people that go on for months or even years and they don't say anything about the hallucinations, because hallucinations have such a negative connotation, that word. And most people, when you think of hallucination, you think of schizophrenia, you think of dementia and Alzheimer's, which is a form of dementia. So I think it's more benefit than not by bringing it up and just saying, hey, this is something and this could happen, and it happens to a certain percentage of people.
One of the big things that I really try to do with a lot of my patients whenever I'm bringing this up is building rapport with my patients. So I try to, from the very start, let them know that, hey, I am here for you and solely your benefit. So whatever you feel like we need to work on, we will work on those things. I'll give you pointers and things like that that I see from like a professional aspect of, hey, we probably should touch on this. But the main goal is to look at the things that you feel like you have trouble doing, and we will get back to doing those. Now, as I go through that, I will really build rapport in saying, like, you can trust me, I can trust you, that we're going to work on this together. So as I go through that kind of trust and rapport aspect, it really helps the patient to know that, like, she's not just telling me this to check a box off. She's not just telling me this that way I can be scared or to so that she can show off her knowledge of Charles-Bonnet syndrome or anything like that. Like, it really sets with the patient a lot better whenever someone is able to kind of build that trust with them first and then lay out the different possibilities. Because yeah, it can be unnerving to think that every day for the next 5 years, I might be thinking and wondering, is Charles-Bonnet going to happen today? My vision's feeling a little bit off. Maybe I've got something going on. Am I going to start seeing different things? So it can definitely be unnerving, but it is a pretty important one to bring up, just because the patient does need to be well-informed and well-educated about different things that may happen to them. That way, if it does happen, they know what's going on. They know the proper resources to reach out to, and they know how to bring it up to their different medical professionals. So that's a big one as far as just laying it out there for your patients and not scaring them into thinking, like, this is absolutely going to happen to you and it's going to be awful. That's not the case, right? Like, it may happen and it may be great. Like, some people actually really enjoy it. So there's a wide variety of different things that can kind of go on there. But just letting your patients know that you're only looking out for their best interest, and that solely is your only interest, then that will definitely help kind of guide the conversation to have a net with this patient that's never heard of Charles-Bonnet syndrome before.
If there's someone that's listening to this podcast and they're saying to themselves, I never thought about seeing an occupational therapist to help me with my low vision, what would you tell them to maybe get them to maybe consider that? And how could an occupational therapist help them? Now, you did mention this briefly, but I would like you to revisit some of the ways that an occupational therapist can help someone with low vision in case someone is considering using one for themselves.
If someone was sitting there questioning, is this something I should consider? I would say absolutely get in contact with somebody that can help you find the right resources. Get in contact with me. Get in contact with Low Vision Works. Let us figure out how to help you. Because like I had said earlier, occupational therapy is so broad as far as what we can do. So I have had patients in the past that liked bowling. So that's what they spent their day doing. So if your low vision is affecting how well you can bowl, that's going to have a huge impact on your overall enjoyment with life. If you aren't able to do what's fun, you're not able to do what's meaningful to you. So let's look at how the different visual tactics we can do to help you bowl. I've had patients that like sewing, crossword puzzles, patients that were still driving and like still had their license and everything and working on different visual skills for that. I've had some very great chefs and like bakers and things like that. So like, let's look at all the meal preps and things. So I think a lot of times people, if you know of occupational therapy, you think of like the different arm exercises and like things like that. And it's really so much more than just the basics of strengthening or something like that. It is truly looking at your life as a whole and finding those different little holes in it. So like, what's something that you aren't able to do anymore that you're like, oh man, that was really beneficial to me? For a lot of my patients, it's reading. You can't read as well whenever you don't have as much sight, obviously. So it makes it a lot more difficult. And patients who used to read for hours and hours a day and haven't picked up a book in the past year. So we look at different ways to improve your reading. You know, with macular degeneration, we have a very awesome way that we kind of train patients to see their words a little bit more clearly, because you know, with macular degeneration, you will lose that kind of central vision first. That's the main kind of target of macular degeneration, sadly, that it takes away some of that central vision. So we talk about the different ways to kind of navigate around that with glaucoma. There's a number of different things, you know, as a low vision occupational therapist as a whole, we look at like lighting. How does lighting affect all the different things that you're doing? People would not know how much lighting truly does affect everything. So you would think, you know, if I can't see it, well, I've had some light on it. But that may not be your first thought. You may think that you have okay lighting in your house, but then we'll come in and we'll be like, this type of lighting is not doing you any favors. You're actually catching a lot of glare from that window there. Or this light, the color of it is not, your eyeball does not like it and it's not helping you out. So we'll look at how to change the lighting and we'll use different like filters and things like that to try to make the lighting a little bit better and help you get around your home. We will look at some different contrast pieces. So contrast is kind of, if you think about like dark black bolded letters, they look great against white paper. Yellow would not look good against white paper because there's no contrast there. So a lot of these patients will have difficulty with contrast. So we will show them how to increase that contrast with different techniques, different devices, things like that. We will also look at a lot of assistive technology. So, you know, a lot of that is going to be recommended by your optometrist or ophthalmologist or things like that. And we can kind of refer you back to them to be like, hey, you might be beneficial getting some more assistive technology. Let's send you in the right way there. So that's a big one that we can do. And then we can also help you figure out how to use that in your daily life. So let's say you just got these cool, swanky new glasses and you have no idea how to use them because they're way different than anything you've ever seen before. And they were strictly, you got them made and you're so excited so that you can sew with them. And suddenly they're not doing the trick because maybe you aren't holding it in the right distance or you aren't using them in exactly the right kind of technique. And so we can kind of guide that a little bit so that you are using all of that technology to the best of your ability. There's a ton of technology now that AI is a thing. So, you know, seeing AI, Be My Eyes, all of these different things are all different apps on your phone that can benefit you a lot. Different devices like home devices, smart home devices are absolutely amazing. There's a lot of resources that we can help you out with. Like if you were one of those people that like to read, and reading a book isn't going to be necessarily easy for you or enjoyable for you, even if we do a few weeks of therapy and then we're like, this is still very difficult. Let's find something to get you doing in the meantime while we try to work on this. There's different like audiobooks and things like that. There's a lot of programs with the government that will provide like free audiobooks. So we can get you signed up with those. We can educate you about different resources in the community, like transportation. We can help you get like paratransit opportunities that may be free or low cost in the area, because driving is a big one that a lot of patients kind of lose. And that's not small beans, you know, losing the ability to drive and just get up and go to the grocery store. That's a really hard occupation to lose for most of my patients. So we'll look at how we can efficiently get you around and work on that community mobility piece as well there. So as far as what we do, it is very, very broad, and it looks very different for every patient that I go in and see. Like there, no session is ever the same throughout the day. Because like I said, some patients may be wanting to bowl. Some patients may be wanting to cook. So we set up cool labeling systems in their pantry and their fridge. Some patients may just want to go for walks. So we figure out how to improve their vision for walks, whether that's, you know, the actual skills of like using your vision while you're walking, or using different assistive technology or applications on your phone. Right. I could go on and on for days, but it is... anything that you can think that you might have trouble doing, an occupational therapist can kind of look at that and either help you learn how to do it and work on those skills, or they can refer you out to somebody who can help you more, like be of more benefit if that doesn't fit in their range. Because referrals is one thing that we're really good at, is, you know, sending you to all the different people that have a lot of expertise in these things. Because while OT is broad, we're not absolute experts with everything that we may come across. So we can look at the different things and be like, oh, you actually may benefit from going to somebody that's specialized in this for that specific activity and things like that. So very broad, but there's tons that we can do. So if anyone's out there thinking maybe occupational therapy can help, it definitely can. If you feel like that there's something in your life that you are having trouble doing, or that you can't participate in, or you're missing any piece of that performance that you wish that you could do again.
I like the fact that you take the time to get to know your patients. You don't just come in and say, this is what we need to do. You interview them and you ask them, how can I help you? And whether that's bowling, whether that's writing, whether that's reading, whether that's cooking, whether it's walking around, whatever it is, I like the fact that you do that. And that is that's very attractive to me, as far as for someone to do that, even if regular doctors would do more of that. How can I help you? So thank you for doing that. And is that accurate? Did I understand that right? That's the approach that you take with your occupational therapy and make goals together with your patient?
Yes, that's exactly accurate. That kind of difference between, you know, somebody coming in and sitting down and taking time and not feeling like they're rushing in and out is a big one that I hear a lot with a lot of my patients. And they'll be like, oh my gosh, that was a breath of fresh air. By the time we get to, I may walk into an evaluation phone and be like, I've seen everyone, they can't help me. And I'll always say, okay, let's talk about all of that. And like, let's digest it all first. And then you let me know. If you don't think that I can help you at the end of this, we can talk about that. But let's go through it first. And so just having someone that walks in the room and they say, okay, tell me all the things that you want to do. Like, I'm not the boss here. This is your life. We're working on your life. So what are the things that you find important? Because if I think that it's important for you to learn how to efficiently do underwater basket weaving, if you have never done underwater basket weaving in your life, you don't want to learn now, unless that is a skill that you're trying to learn now. Otherwise, that's not something that you're going to be like, oh, let's add that to my plan of care. So that's why I try to let it be solely based on the different things that you tell me as a patient, I have trouble with this. Okay, let's add that to your plan of care and let's make a goal about that? Like, is that something that's feasible to you? Is that realistic to you? Is that something that will give you more enjoyment in your life if you can do that? If so, let's add it on there.
How has learning about Charles Bonnet syndrome made you a better occupational therapist?
For one, I think it's just the ability to relate to these patients that are going through this. A lot of times I'll walk into a session and a lot of these patients are from all over the United States, sometimes the world. You can imagine I'm in Florida, so a lot of older people will come down to Florida and lay roots down here later on in their life. So I get people from all over the United States. They are also going through, you know, these different problems with their eyes and their vision and everything that I can't relate to either. But it serves as a major piece of like, hey, I've got you. I can know what you're going through. If you can throw out like, this may be something that comes up. And so just being able to relate to those patients, because they might not have had anyone else in their life that ever said those words and, you know, said, hey, this is a possibility, something that may happen. If this is happening to you, let's talk about it. They may not have ever had that. And so just as an occupational therapist, having that ability or something that I can look at them and be like, okay, let's dive into this. Let's actually figure this out. You know, if this is hindering what you're doing in your life, let's figure out how we can kind of go around that. So that's one big piece. And then also the advocacy piece of it, you know, that is something that all occupational therapists are highly, highly educated on, is advocacy. So, you know, figuring out ways to spread the word, whether that's just talking to different patients or medical providers, figuring out ways to improve things, even like as far as like doing lawmaking things like that. We all have a pretty good understanding of how to reach out to lawmakers and, you know, different legislators, things like that. If there's any political aspects that need to be changed about different things that come up in our profession. But advocacy is a big one. And that's kind of a passion point for me, is advocacy, because, you know, I love what I do. And I go to work every day knowing that I'm going to do some good that day. And it feels awesome. And so the advocacy piece comes really natural because of that. And so I will tell anyone that has their ears even slightly pointed towards me, like, hey, have you heard about low vision? Have you heard about Charles Bonnet syndrome? Do you know what occupational therapy can do for you? So, you know, the advocacy piece is huge for me specifically. So I try to spread the good and whatever I can with low vision patients and, you know, what occupational therapy, the role that it plays with those patients.
So what advice would you give to someone that is struggling with their Charles Bonnet syndrome? Because as you mentioned, some people, once they find out what it is, they're okay. They're like, okay, I can deal with this. And some people actually have hallucinations that they enjoy. They're pleasant. But there is a certain percentage of people that it's a bit of a struggle. They see things that are frightening, that are annoying. And what kind of advice would you share with someone who's having a difficult time with Charles Bonnet syndrome?
That's a wonderful point, just because it is so broad in what may happen. You know, some people, like I've said, it's fine. They don't mind it at all. It's kind of pleasant for them to see those different things. But I have run into many patients that don't have that experience, and it's a very big hindrance on their life. I've tried to describe it to some people that, you know, will ask me about Charles Bonnet. For these people that see tons and tons of different hallucinations throughout the day, I will say, like, imagine you have this little flashlight and you're trying to sort through a drawer and find one specific thing, but there's all different things on top of that. And you have to sort through all that to find the one thing that you need. That's what it's like sometimes for these people with very little vision left, that they, you know, that residual vision that they have left over that they're trying to use. It's hard enough to use that. Now, if you add these different hallucinations and things on top of it, you have to sort through that and find, you know, what's best, or what am I actually looking for here? Is that the Charles Bonnet syndrome, you know, hallucination, or is that actually there? And so that piece in itself is really frightening, and it's hard for patients. But I guess the one piece of advice I would say is you're not alone, because I see that a lot of patients, you know, feel very isolated in this. Their family members don't know what's going on. If their family members aren't educated or they don't understand it, it's really hard. The doctors, if you keep running into that, you know, and people don't, the doctors themselves don't know what's going on. The different people that you run into throughout the day, if you're working, your coworkers, your boss, things like that, it can feel very isolating to be one of those people going through this if you don't know other people that are also going through it. So the biggest piece of advice I give people is try to reach out to these different support groups, try to reach out to different people who know what you're going through, and, you know, take solace in the fact that there are other people out there that can kind of help guide you. And, you know, they may not have all the answers you need. You know, you may join a support group and throw a question out there and they may have no idea. Like, there may not be an answer for that. But at the end of the day, at least there is someone else who can relate to what you're going through, and they get it. And they see, like, okay, this is not, I'm not in a boat rowing across the ocean by myself. There's a bunch of other people in boats that are rowing across the ocean with me, and we're all in this together, getting to the same, you know, solution here. So just given the idea that you're not by yourself, there's a lot of different options out there, and then try to connect those patients with those different options that are out there. So whether that's, you know, connecting patients to different support groups or counseling or different medical professionals who can also assist, things like that, that's all going to be beneficial for that patient so that they don't feel so alone, or that they don't feel like, well, we've got to figure this out by ourselves. Like, there are people out there that can help. You just got to have the right connections to get to those different sources of help.
I wanted to commend you too, because when you first found out about Charles-Bonnet syndrome, you didn't shun it or not look into it. You actually started looking into it more, started studying it more, started finding ways to educate yourself so you could learn how to help your patients better and become an advocate too. Because I know you became passionate about this subject because it affects so many people. And the fact, just the fact that it usually affects, well, not usually, it always affects people that are visually impaired, and a large portion of the people that are visually impaired are older, and then you have hallucinations, and then people, it has such a stigma to have hallucinations that people don't discuss it. So we're thinking definitely easily millions of people, but it could be tens of millions of people or more that have Charles-Bonnet syndrome. So I just wanted to commend you on finding out about it and incorporating that into your questions that you ask your patients, and taking the time to talk on this podcast and things like that. What would you say to someone that is maybe a medical professional in some capacity, and maybe they're unfamiliar with this, or maybe they are, but they don't know how to do research or how to help their patients? What kind of advice or thoughts would you like to share with them?
That's a very good one. I would say that, you know, I may be naive in believing this, but I would like to believe that if you go into the medical world and your job is to help people, then you have a heart that wants to help those people. And so just in that mindset alone, constantly be seeking out those different things that may help somebody. And for these Charles-Bonnet syndrome patients, that is a big one. You know, I have some patients that Charles-Bonnet syndrome, the effects that they have from that far more inhibits what they do throughout their life than their low vision. And so it's important to kind of look at what the patient needs. And, you know, if you're treating these different patients, you want to look into the different ways to help it. So if you don't know about it, learn about it. It's not hard. You may have to spend some time searching for the different pieces of information. You know, it's not like there's a gold platter out there with all the information you may need about Charles-Bonnet syndrome. You're going to learn it as you continue researching it. And that comes with anything, really. Charles-Bonnet syndrome is a piece that has become really important to me just because of some of my patients that have really inspired me. And like, I've seen how much they're going through, and I want to find out everything I can about that. But I mean, that would be the case for anything that somebody might be going through, and you wanting to find out everything you can to help that patient. I never claim to know everything that I can possibly know. like I said before, I'm not an expert on everything, but I will say that if something's going on that is affecting you, I will do everything I can to figure out. So Charles Bonnet syndrome was one of those opportunities where I had, you know, learned about it and like seen some different pieces of it, but I never really fully dove into let's figure out how to truly get into this until I got some of those patients that it was a major factor of their life. So, you know, if you are a medical professional out there and you're looking for different ways to kind of educate yourself on Charles Bonnet syndrome, one is just to get a general idea of what's going on. And if you're listening to this podcast, I assume you've got that, right? There's a lot of different, you know, medical journals and things like that. There's a lot of different dissertations and theses on different databases that you can look for information. There's a lot of clinical studies and things like that, case studies that you can see. Those are really nice, the case studies, because you can see how Charles Bonnet syndrome presents itself for different patients. So I was looking through some a few weeks ago, and I was seeing different, you know, presentations of Charles Bonnet syndrome, the different hallucinations that I had never seen before. And so I was like, okay, that's good for me to tuck in the back of my brain, just in case anyone ever, you know, brings that up sometime, that this is something that I can kind of add in and relate to them on later on and be like, I actually read a case study about that. You're not alone there. There's someone else that also has that same thing going on. So, you know, don't be afraid to educate yourself. You go through all this training to be a medical professional or a medical provider, but the training doesn't stop there. You have to continuously, you know, stay up to date. You don't learn everything you need to learn in school, no matter what your profession is. You learn what you need to learn based on the patients that you get and you continuing your professional education pieces. So I, you know, have taken a big interest in Charles Bonnet syndrome. So I'm trying to help, you know, add that educational piece to different places that I can. I've reached out to a few different like OT programs to see if there's any way that we can add Charles Bonnet syndrome to, like, you know, some kind of course where they're talking about different conditions or the low vision piece of OT, something like that, and be like, hey, this is out there. So, you know, the amount of occupational therapists that go on to work with low vision patients is a small percentage, but at the end of the day, that small percentage or that small drop in the bucket, that's several people's lives that you may be able to help. So that's a big piece there that I'm trying to, you know, push to advocate for other medical professionals to kind of look at. And like I said, I've talked with a few different medical people that, you know, some of the patients may end up seeing that I am just aware of here, and seeing what the kind of general consensus is there and seeing the areas where it might could benefit. You know, maybe I've had trouble myself finding different therapists that someone can go talk to, like a talk therapist, a psychotherapist, something like that, that my patients can go see, just because, you know, you don't want to send somebody in to go talk to somebody about your visual hallucinations and it's not a psychiatric disorder. It's something completely different. And so that's been a big one that, like, I've kind of come to a halt on trying to find the different resources there to send people to and refer over. So, I mean, the biggest thing I can think is don't be afraid, if you are a medical professional, to continue learning, because I feel like at no point in my career will I ever be like, I have learned it all. I have wiped my hands and I'm good. It's just, you got to continue that learning piece of these different things that may come up and find all the different resources, because we have all the resources at our fingertips. You just got to figure out how to navigate them. And that takes some time and some experience to figure out all of that piece as well.
And even doctors who are specialists and have a lot of years of training and a lot of years of experience are still trying to figure out Charles Bonnet syndrome. And I think just because the mind and the body is so complex that as soon as you figure one thing out, something else you realize is not the case anymore. And it's just, it's hard. But the more we can learn about it, the better we can at least understand it and then be able to shift our mindsets and then advocate for it. And hopefully one day it will be a traditional cure, or maybe a cure will have to come in a non-traditional way. Like they will develop a new kind of, like, cognitive behavioral therapy is there to help you change your mindset and reframe how you think. Maybe they're going to have to reformulate that or use that for Charles-Vanay syndrome or come up with something else. But who knows? But yeah, this is something that we just have to just keep to the forefront, keep learning about. And I like the fact that you are being an advocate and you're helping your patients with this.
What is out there for the patients with Charles-Vanay syndrome? It can feel like you're hitting a lot of dead ends sometimes. And that may be the case. It may be like one of those mazes that you just keep hitting dead end after dead end. And then you have to backtrack and then you have to go through something else. But there are, there's options out there. There's different people that can help you out there that we're here. We would love to help. I like to think that most occupational therapists have a giving and like helping heart. So, don't feel like you've gotten this word that you have Charles-Vanay syndrome or you have hallucinations and you're thinking, oh, maybe this is Charles-Vanay syndrome. It's not a helpless, like, that's the end of it type of thing. There are, there's a lot of possibilities to have a very fulfilling and happy life after that. You can learn all of these different techniques. You can figure out how to get around your life a lot better and start doing the things that you like. It's not an end-all, be-all type of thing whenever you hear the words Charles-Vanay syndrome. There's a lot of good that can also come from after that. So it's never just, that's it. Figure it out. Even if you do hear that somewhere, go somewhere else because someone else can probably help you. It's not always just, that's really unfortunate. You have that. Good luck. There's people out there that can help you and figure out all the different things that we can do to help make your life better. Because that's the whole goal of low vision occupational therapy is finding all those things that are important to you and get you back to doing them.
I'm going to put the information about you and also about the company that you work for in the show notes. But one last time before we go, can you give the name of the company that you work for and maybe the website and even your email address verbally just so people can have it if they're listening?
So I am with Low Vision Works in Sarasota, Florida. We treat all down the coast of Florida as far as inpatient or in-person therapy. However, we do offer telehealth for a lot of different patients. And honestly, if you just need somebody to kind of guide you in the right steps, we can help with that as well. So if you wanted to contact us, we have a website. It's lowvisionworks.com. We have a phone number, 941-366-0011, or the toll-free number is 1-866-590-0011. We would always love to talk and chat. My information specifically is mwilson, W-I-L-S-O-N, at lowvisionworks.com. If you would like to email me and chat about anything, that is perfectly fine. I can give you kind of some of my ideas of things that may be beneficial to you and help kind of guide you in the right way. Because as occupational therapists, that's what we try to do is point you in the way to live your best life and do all those things that you want to do. So feel free to reach out if anyone has any questions or anything like that. Or maybe if you just have some more questions that I didn't answer on here or have some questions popped up that we didn't discuss, that would be perfectly fine.
Thank you so much. And I'm sure some people will reach out and I've learned a lot because I knew about low vision specialists and I knew about counselors and I knew about group therapy and things like that, but I didn't necessarily know. And I even knew about occupational therapists. I knew that they can help with handwriting and strengthening your core and things like that, but I never really thought about using an occupational therapist to help with low vision. So if nothing else, I've learned something. I'm sure someone else has, and they will consider that because there are a lot of resources and a lot of people out there that can help. So thanks for your time. Thanks for being passionate about Charles-Vanay. Thanks for helping your patients so much. And thanks for all the things that you've shared in this interview.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad I was able to share a little bit about occupational therapy and everything that it can do for some low vision patients and hopefully do some good out there.